Can you go in two directions at the same time? Not in the physical world, but in the emotional area. You are able to go both up and down at the same time. Do you remember the last time there was a moment of happiness in your life when your child perhaps won an award, or a race, or into scholarship? Didn't you feel as though at that moment you were 10 feet high, bursting with jubilation, and then at the same time, you discovered how humbled you were at the very thought that your own daughter or son, someone who had been loaned to you by God, had become all of a sudden such a talented person? Simultaneously, you had a high and a low. And there is that kind of high and low in our own efforts to locate God. He is high above and beyond us, the author of the universe, inventing the stars and directing the galaxies. But the Lord Spirit is also deep down within each one of us. Is he not present here now, in our midst and in our own heart? During the week, prompting us to control our temper, to abstain from evil thoughts, guiding us in good deeds, prompting us to pray. Our God is always in both places, just as we learned in childhood, and also in all places and in all people. Now that quality of being high above us and yet deep within us, of being apart from us and part of us, that is described by theologians in their own kind of terminology. The greatness of the eternal God, the detachment of our Creator from us creatures, is called by the word transcendence. But the closeness of the loving one, as close to each of us as our heartbeat. Now, that is known as immanence, the Spirit of the living God within our heart. And when we stress the majesty of God, we are prone to call him Lord. That is why in our ritual liturgy, we refer to the Almighty Everlasting God. That's transcendence. But then whenever we want to accent the closeness, we are prone to address God as a parent, as a father. It doesn't mean that people do not have fathers and mothers. Rather, it means that God is trying to tell us that all of humankind, all people who have ever lived, have one divine parent. There is not a Muslim God and a Christian God and a Jewish God. There's one God. The same Spirit of God lives in Christians and Jewish people and Muslims. And the same Spirit of the same God is present in all people. Now, a moment ago, we heard Malachi's words. He's the last prophet of the Old Testament. And he begins his description of his vision of God by alluding to God as a great king, the Lord of hosts. And by that he means the hosts of stars and constellations. And it is awesome to think of the magnitude of that divine handiwork that we see now in the sky as the moon is at half-mast and becomes full. And sometimes it's clear. We can do it this season what Theodore Roosevelt would do with his family. He would call them out on a clear night out into the lawn and tell them all to look up into the sky and see the stars and ponder them. Then after a while of stillness, he would say to the family, Now we know how small we are. Now let's go back into the house and remember that, so that our heads will never get too big. But then Malachi began to meditate a little bit, and he concludes today's utterance by calling God a Father, with the famous lines, "We all have but one Father, and that there's only one man, and that's every man, and only one woman, and that's every woman. And there's only one family," he says, "and that's the human family." And then the prophet charges us not ever to break faith with anyone in the human family. He says how terrible it is for brother to hate brother or sister to hate sister. Malachi says we must not break the precious ties of our common humanity. And the psalmist today continues and expresses the imminence of God in a most poignant fashion. The psalmist says that our soul, our spirit, can always become stilled and quieted like a weaned child on its mother's lap. The psalmist says, learn to let go of your anxieties. Discover peace as a child would go to a loving parent. When your spirit is tremulous, when you are bewildered, when you are apprehensive, savor and discover peace as a child nursing in its mother's lap. That's what God is for. Paul continues, the psalmist, with parental imagery. Paul talks about the work that he did with his flock, and he reminded them, whenever there is love among the members of the flock, that is divine love, that all love among people is the love of God in their heart, reflected through their human heart. There's only one kind of love, and that's God's love, reflected as human love. And Paul says, we should look upon the Lord as tenderly as we look upon a nursing mother by the child. A nursing mother fondling her little ones. That is our God. And then Paul continues asking, but where do we find that God? He says, yes, God is at work up in the sky, but also, he says, the Lord is at work within you. Especially, he says, in those people who believe. That is the mystery of our God. The mystery is reflected up in the stars and within each one of us. There's no difference. It's the same God with the same power. And once we people discover the mysterious Spirit of God at work within us and in the sky, we begin to understand how easy it is to pray. That prayer is a relationship, not a discipline. A relationship between a child and a nursing mother. Prayer is not something that we do. Prayer is something that God's Spirit does within us. Any welcome awareness of God's presence is a prayer. But we do need to take the time, a little bit of discipline, to become aware, to develop an awareness of how close the Lord is. We modern people, so in love with computers, want to fill time with productivity or else kill time. How sad that we have lost the beauty of the moment, of just a daydream, a reverie, a moment of stillness, the chance to see the wonders around us, drifting clouds, a happy memory, the sound of laughter, the person next to us. To learn once more to understand, not to think in split seconds and productive hours, but in moments that can become subjective, to savor the beauty of the moment, this moment, now, to capture a moment of time before it fades away into the impersonal past. And even better, during the week, make that precious moment holy. Hallow the moment. Make it sacred. Be aware that you are spending that precious moment with God. That is the beauty of it. And when you begin to stop thinking of time that has to be crammed with productive activity, you become aware that the presence of God is discovered. And you stop. And that's prayer. You open yourself up to the Spirit that has been within you all of the time. Discover that God is there all the while. And then it is God who sanctifies the moment, and that is enough. God does the work if you allow God to do it. You need not even cram that moment with petitions or praise or thanksgiving or words of any kind. Just be. The point is, enjoy that graced moment. A tiny crease between time and eternity shared by you and God. Now that kind of communion can happen anytime, anywhere. Before going to sleep at night, in traffic going to work, after solving a problem at the job, when putting the children to bed at night, washing dishes, or waiting in the dentist's office. And it can happen here, now, at Mass. That precious moment, so mysterious, will always defy the place and the circumstance. It's a dimension of time, and it's a gift. It is God's gift of time. The trick is to shorten the intervals between those brief gifts of time until after a while they all string together like pearls on a necklace. And then you have peace. You savor peace of heart that the world cannot give